at what point are we ignoring the division of labor thing? When I was a Litecoin miner, in my short career as a Litecoin miner, I sucked. I was burning out my graphics cards. I was creating all this heat. I couldn't keep it cool. I couldn't keep the thing on. I had to keep rebooting it. It was inefficient. And these people who have these large warehouses where they're cooling it with the Arctic cold somewhere in Scandinavia or in the North Pole even, and they're hooking up their machines correctly so that they don't burn out their cards. Whereas I didn't know what I was doing and I had to learn those mistakes the hard way, they're more efficient at doing that than me. So why not have a little bit of division of labor here so that the whole process can be a little more efficient? There are costs to decentralization too.
Absolutely. Decentralized systems are far more costly than having a centralized clearinghouse. You do have less efficiency in the labor of the clearinghouse, but that's a compromise that most of the people who are in Bitcoin are willing to make. And the reason they're willing to make that is because when you concentrate power in a clearinghouse, it's more efficient. But then the clearinghouse has enormous power and they tend to abuse that. They use that power in order to establish monopolies. So you end up paying for that efficiency and externalities in the system.
So let's look at a couple of case studies. I mean, there have been points in the past where some of the Bitcoin mining pools have gotten close to the theoretical scary number of 51%. That is, having more than 50% of the network hashing power that they could then use to initiate double spends or to do other nefarious things that could mess with Bitcoin. There was the pool ghash.io, and they did actually get over 51% for a time, right? And then people started to leave the pool, I guess concerned Bitcoin miners who didn't want that pool to have more than 51% because they feared it would ruin Bitcoin or negatively affect Bitcoin, probably justly so. People left it until it got smaller. And it happened with a couple of other mining pools in the past. I can't remember the first time it happened, but it was one of these early mining pools, and now I'm just forgetting their name. Do either of you guys remember?
Is this BTC Guild in the old days?
BTC Guild, yes. Thank you. It happened with BTC Guild where they were approaching 51% as well, or they got close to 35, 40, 45% of the network power. I guess that was because they were a good mining pool because they figured out how to serve their customers, which are the people who are contributing power to the mining pool. And it became popular because they wanted to mining pool where they got the best rewards or whatever service. But then that became a double-edged sword because people started to leave as they became scared of that 51% potential. So there has not yet been an instance where a mining pool had so much hashing power and they decided to abuse it by initiating some kind of double spend. But there have been those instances in altcoins. And actually, that happens quite frequently because, speaking of Bitcoin mining, a lot of people have invested in Bitcoin mining hardware, which is now pretty much worthless for Bitcoin. But if they can find a new altcoin, if it's mining on the same algorithm as Bitcoin, SHA-256, they point their ASIC hardware at it, and pretty soon they might be well on the way to taking over the network of that new fledgling altcoin, or the altcoin that not many people are mining on because there are lots of altcoins out there and lots of people's mining power is limited. There have been instances where other coins have these kinds of attacks. I think there was one on Terra Coin. Do you guys remember that? I think we talked about it on the show more than a year ago.
Yeah, there have been a few 51% attacks, but there haven't been that many. I think that maybe a couple a month, you know, in the entire cryptocurrency panoply, unless I'm just not hearing about most of them.
I would say probably they're not like huge events anymore. I mean, what can someone do with a 51% attack is another question. Like, it's made out to be this big, scary thing. But really, the worst thing that they can do, pretty much, is do a double spend and then put that double spent coin into an exchange, get real Bitcoin or real fiat from that, and then it was actually a double spend and the exchange is out. Or they buy a product with it and the product ships or something, but mostly it's exchanges. Andreas, would you agree that's pretty much like the worst thing one can do with a double spend attack or a 51% attack?
Well, yes. Not only is that the misunderstanding that persists out there is that people can use this to steal money and they can't. You can do a double spend attack that you have to then either get a product shipped or an exchange withdrawal to happen for it to be valuable. However, you can also do a denial of service attack, which is probably more serious. Denial of service attack against transactions or other mining pools in such a way as to maintain dominance over a double spend possibility or capability. So once you get 51% attack, you can use that to keep others from mining blocks to a point where you maintain that hashing power by starving them of rewards.
You said the misconception is that people can use a double spend or 51% attack to steal money. You're talking about like rewriting history, right? Like if I have Bitcoins in my Bitcoin address, the idea, which is mistaken, could literally roll back the blockchain and roll back history and take those Bitcoins out of my Bitcoin address and give it to themselves, right?
Well, no, not only that, but it has nothing to do with rolling back history. Which there's two aspects to that. First of all, you can't create a transaction which you don't have signing authority over it, whether you control 51% of the network or not, whether you can pull off a 51% attack or not. You still can't control funds that you don't have signing authority or keys for. All you can do is spend your own funds, and then after someone's exchanged those funds for something else, rewrite history and then spend those funds again and deprive the recipients of those funds from those funds. But you can't spend other people's funds or create transactions that are bogus or sign without having keys and things like that. So there's a big misunderstanding of exactly what you can do. However, the disruptive potential is there. Keep in mind, though, that there's this big dichotomy, which is that the coins on which it is easy to do 51% attacks don't usually have monetary value that is worth doing a double spend attack for. And most of these attacks have just been malicious and denial of service oriented. And the coins that do have value, especially Bitcoin, it's not possible at the moment with the hashing capacity that's out there to pull off a 51% attack. And there's a reason for that. It's because the incentives are aligned to prevent you from doing that. First of all, a lot of people are watching so that when a pool gets close to that level, people's livelihood is threatened. This economy is threatened. So people make a big fuss about it. Miners are incented to change pools and do things about it. And people notice when there is a double spend attack or a potential for a double spend attack. So where it's most profitable to do one, it's hardest to do one. And where it's easy to do an attack, it's not very profitable. So that's one of the things that makes us, at least makes me look at 51% attacks as a very interesting theoretical possibility and something we need to be on the lookout for and be aware of the possibility. But at the same time, I don't consider it a practical threat to Bitcoin as it is today, because I think that the market will always adjust to protect the value of the network.
Given that we think that decentralization is good and we think that it's necessary and positive in Bitcoin mining, I've often wondered, what is centralization now relative to other times in the past? Because it seems like, again, for many of the reasons that Stephanie mentioned, that simply put, she isn't a specialist in it. And so there's like this natural drive for the people who stay in as the pie stays the same, the people who are still maintaining their share of the pie are the ones that are able to continue to increase their productivity relative to the rest of the network. So that's a very elite group of people. So the question here is basically just, has centralization, are we as bad as we've ever been? Are we, half as bad as we've ever been? What do you think the state is of mining centralization now relative to other times in Bitcoin's history?
It's a moving target, because the thing is it ebbs and flows and it goes in cycles. You have cycles of centralization and then you have cycles of decentralization. The overall trend is towards centralization. You can look at the stats. So for example, if you look at mining stats or mining charts, places like Blockchain Info or the places that contain mining statistics, you can look at the percentage of blocks being discovered by various mining pools and see how that changes over time.
Where do we see mining going from here?
The natural lead-in, I think, actually, is to talk about BitShares, because it is 100 rotating delegates, no mining proof of work whatsoever, like 10-second transactions. And so they're like the example of centralization for those performance increases and for those usability benefits that we're talking about, how Bitcoin doesn't really have them. And, that's a good thing from one perspective in that it provides this stuff, but it also is, in theory, more centralized because there are only a maximum of 101 participants actually having a say at any given time.
Well, if we're going to talk about that, we could also talk about just proof of stake, 100% proof of stake coins, which are really interesting. There are some people who are opposed to them. One of the biggest criticisms that I've seen is the so-called nothing at stake problem. As I understand it, there's no cost to a proof of stake forger or miner to mining on different blockchains. And so if they wanted to mine on an alternate blockchain, they can do that, and they can do it on as many as they want with no cost. Whereas with a proof of work currency, there is a cost to mining on alternate blockchains.
Okay, so here's a question, Stephanie. If you had a reasonable amount of pure coin or whatever, would you have continued mining? Or would you have stopped at basically the same point? Was it about profitability or was it about inconvenience of using mining? Because you were talking about heat and stuff.
Well, at the time when I was mining, there really were no proof of stake coins except Purecoin, which is only half proof of stake. It's half proof of work. There were no 100% proof of stake coins at that time. So I didn't really have the option of just using a 100% proof of stake coin. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't... Okay, so a proof of stake coin, to forge it or mine it, all you have to do is hold some amount of the coin and have the client open. That's just not as fun. Like, there's no engineering involved.
So the work makes it fun. The work, you know, that's part of the enjoyment of the process.
It was a curiosity thing, I think.
I guess it's an accomplishment, whereas this is really just more like, hey, I turned on the oven.
Yeah, but it's stupid.
I just love the smell of burnt capacitors in the morning.
Yeah, so that's what it smells
like.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the question is, does that actually add value? I mean, is that part of what's adding value to Bitcoin? Because, I mean, again, like mining, people think about it like mining is the process of processing transactions. And that's just not true. Mining is the process of creating a number that is unique to you based on the amount of work that you're putting in, essentially. And then that number is compared against everybody else in the space, essentially. That's a gross simplification.
Well, I would disagree with that, Adam. I mean, I think there is a big misunderstanding between means and ends in mining. Currency creation is a reward system. The goal of mining is to provide security and verification of transactions for the network. That is the function of mining. It verifies transactions, it aggregates transactions into blocks. And it acts as a gatekeeper to access to the blockchain so that the things that are recorded in the blockchain are verified. The new coins that are created, transaction fees, that's not the goal of mining. That's not why mining exists, to just create new coins. You can create coins other ways. Mining exists in order to provide security in the form of a decentralized clearinghouse through consensus. And the reward system is there to encourage that behavior in a way that supports the network and discourages cheating. But it's often easy to confuse the means with the end when it comes to mining. Based on the statistics that I'm looking at here, at the moment, the DiscusFish mining pool has about 28% of the hashing power. This is over the last 24 hours. Over the last 4 days, again, 28% for DiscusFish, 16% for Ghash.io, 7% for KNC Miner, 5% for BTC Guild, 5% for Allegius. So I would say, based on those statistics, that at the moment, we are less centralized than we were this past summer when Ghash came close to, I think, 48% or 50% at some point. I don't think they ever hit 51.
That's really interesting, because basically the giant that last time this was a real concern, Ghash.io, has been unseated, and this newcomer, DiscusFish, that wasn't even really around that I remember before, has risen to the top almost. So it does seem like there's a lot of flux and transition in which mining pools are dominant.
Feels like the pendulum swings, right? We just had an election where the ruling party was thrown out, you know, world-changing results and all this stuff. And the new party's gone in. Of course, it was the old party 8 years ago or 6 years ago. So, you know, I mean...
Yeah, it's been alternating basically Democrat-Republican in the U.S. for...
Right.
Right, each of them.
Well, but I mean, it seems like a similar dynamic is at play here, right? Because it makes sense to be part of the biggest mining pool, because that means you get more rewards more often, since the pool that you're a part of is finding more blocks than the pools that are smaller.